Welcome to Stewardship, Lesson 2. Last week we just covered a lot of scripture, and this week we're hoping to get into some practical budgeting categories. I have something on up here that I think we're all right. Some different ways that we can look at our finances, try to manage them well. So that's hopefully what we get through today. There's quite a bit to cover, so I hope you stick with me as we go through this. I appreciate you praying for me and for my family this week. It has been a struggle, but I know that your prayers have helped me to remain calm. My computer crashed on Tuesday, and so my notes are handwritten in my notebook here, so with no edits, so it may be a little bit jumbled, but we'll get through it. I should just make some few acknowledgments before we get started. Much of the information which I'm going to cover today is not original to myself. You guys all have a budgeting analysis form. This is pretty much right out of a book called Money Answer Book by Dave Ramsey. I just put it into an Excel format so that we could print it out and have it available, because it's pretty much an eye chart when we get up to that slide. I've also had a number of other books that I've gone through. Business by the Book by Larry Burkett. I don't have the other Dave Ramsey book with me, but it's Total Money Makeover, which my wife and I used. And then Crown Financial Ministries. I went to a seminar with them in 2006, and it was really helpful. Really changed my heart on where I was putting my treasure. So this is just a few of the different resources that I've used in preparing these sermons or these Sunday school lessons. With that, let's just go to the Lord in prayer this morning as we get started. Lord, we are thankful that you've given us your word. God, I thank you for this body who desires to serve you well. We're thankful for Christ, that he forgives our sins. God, I ask that you would just use this time, that you would use it to mold us, that you would shape us, that you would chisel away at our hard hearts, help us become better stewards, managing your resources well. Pray this in Christ's name. Amen. I do want to start just this morning and just give some clarifications on a few of the things that we discussed last week. The first is in regard to borrowing for a home. I think one of the questions may have come up that, can I take out a 30-year mortgage if the payment is actually less than what I might otherwise pay for rent? The easy answer would be to say yes. You know, the line item, you look at your budget, you know, my rent was $800, my house mortgage is going to be $500. Then yeah, that sounds like your budget looks better by taking out a 30-year mortgage. But I don't know that that's the case. If that was the case, you might say, well, why don't I go ahead and just take out a 45-year mortgage, and then I can just get a really nice house. You know, my payment's going to be the same, but I can really upgrade in house. And I don't think that's the case that we want to push that in that direction. I just don't think it'd be wise, and I don't think this is what the Lord is showing us in his word, that, you know, as we are in debt, we're slave to the lender. When buying a home, Dave Ramsey, he recommends that you save 20% of your down payment for a down payment, and then you have a 15-year fixed rate mortgage. If you're following his plan, you should be able to pay off your home early then. I think it's wise advice. This also helps you as you save 20% down for a home. It helps you avoid PMI, which is a Somebody could help me here, but it's a type of insurance. It's a mortgage insurance that you have to purchase so that if in case of a default, the lender is covered. So you can avoid this by saving 20%. So it's something extra that you have to pay. The first home that Tara and I purchased in southern Illinois, it was in an old coal mining town. The coal mine had built many of the homes there. And the couple who owned this house before us, which was a two-bedroom, one-bath home, raised five children in it. And one of them was a set of twins. Now, that house was about, I think it was about 1,200 square feet. Today, this seems pretty radical. Two bedrooms, one bath, four girls, one boy, and, you know, that's their children. So, that's pretty impressive. So seven people in a home with two bedrooms. But it's possible. So when buying a home, let's not try to be wiser than God and just look at the monthly spend. I think the Lord gives us direction to avoid long-term debt. And this might require us to humble ourselves and sacrifice for a bit. I think if you wanted to know more about, you know, our first home and how it humbled us, you can talk to Tara. But the house really became a blessing to us during that time of our life. The second clarification that I want to just talk about is just past dues, past the plate. Last week, I told you that if you were behind on your bills, that you shouldn't give. I just want to define that a little bit more, what a past due is, to help you understand that a little bit clearer. A past due is a payment that was supposed to be paid in a previous month. And furthermore, it's not that you just forgot to pay it. So if you forgot to write a check to someone, but it's actually that you didn't have enough money to pay it. So you don't have any savings. There's nothing to cover this payment. So, for instance, we have many members here in our congregation who own rental property. And if we had someone else in our congregation who is renting from them, it would not be helpful to the body if the person who was renting failed to pay their rent so that they could give an offering to the church. That would not be helpful to the body. The people who are owning these rental properties, they count on that income. And so someone is taking money from them and giving it to the church. I don't think that's helpful. It's it's causing the body to ache. It's causing dysfunction among the members. You know, you're looking at each other like, why aren't you paying me? And, you know, you're giving money to the church, you know. This isn't helpful for the body. So I think if you're past dues, if you owe money previous months to someone, then you should not give. That shouldn't stop you from desiring to give. Your heart should say, I need, this is something I should do. So that should make us desire to take steps, find people that know how to manage money well, have them help you do that. So I think I've covered the two clarifications. I think tonight we can just move on into the lesson for today. I just want to start with Proverbs 27:23. It says, "Know well the condition of your flocks and give attention to your herds." It goes on in the next few verses to talk about how those flocks and herds will provide. But as you pay attention to your finances, as you pay attention to your budget, the goal is that these things are going to provide for you, provide for your family, for your needs. I asked you earlier this week, for those who are on the table, I'm not sure if everyone is, if you would prepare some goals for life, financial goals. If you've not done this, or didn't get the message, that's okay. You know, you can bring those next week. I'll just knock 10% off your grade. but we can get through that. But it's important to write these goals down, to start with a plan. Do you have something to look forward to in terms of where you want to go? Depending on your goals, it may mean radical life changes. It may mean just slight adjustments. But I think your goals should be SMART goals. So they should be specific, measurable, achievable. You should have the resources to do them. And then you should make a timeline. As you do this, you can kind of measure yourself where you're at. The goal or the plan to write your goals down, they say that if you write your goals down, you're more likely to succeed. So if you write them down, post them on a refrigerator, you're going to look at them frequently. So have your goals someplace where you can see them, where you can look to them often. Make short-term and long-term goals. So, you know, if you have a goal that you want to get done the next month or next 3 months, and then make longer-term goals, you know, if you want to go on vacation, pay off your home. These should be all of your, list them all out. So you should have some that are short-term, some that are long-term. And then find accountability. If you have, so it is important that you share these with the people around you, the people that you see often, that you talk to, so that they can follow up with you and ask you how you're doing. So as we do this, we're able to spur each other on to reach our goals. So I think this is just wise to you know, share with the people around you and even your small group if you have goals that you want to meet. The next slide is Dave Ramsey gives some guidance on goals. He kind of lays them out for you. This is, I think, really helpful. My wife and I have been following this, Dave Ramsey's plan. And he calls it the baby steps. And the baby steps are just basically a list of goals. His first goal that everyone should do is, you know, just really what the foundation of the baby steps is the budget. So that, you know, you need to have a budget in place in order to do any of these, but to save some money, to get off the cycle of having using credit cards for emergencies. So save $1,000 and then move on from that to paying off all your debt. So use a debt snowball to do that. Then as you get a little bit further on, you can save 3 to 6 months of expenses, save for retirement, college funding, pay off your home early, build wealth. And Dave Ramsey's motto is, if you live like no one else, later you can really live like no one else. So he just desires that we be debt-free so that we can live and give like no one else. So I think this is, you know, this is a good basis for, in terms of your financial goals, how you can align them, and have a plan. It's kind of laid out, so it's real easy. We've been following this. We're actually right now we're kind of in this category. So we, our real next big goal for us would be to pay off our home early. The next slide. So the budget analysis, no, doesn't matter what your goals are, you need to have a budget in place. And kind of the first thing to get started with that is to have a budget. To make a budget, you need to understand two things. The first thing you need to understand is, what is my income? The next thing you need to understand is, what are my expenses? This budget form, which you guys, if you have, I think everyone should have a copy. If not, you'll need to move closer because you really can't see it on the screen. But it lays out a number of different categories. This is probably way more complicated than any one budget should be, but I think it builds a solid foundation for what your budget might look like in the future. And it gives many of the categories. At the top, you'll see that the tithe or charity, and then some recommended percentages. We use this as kind of a guideline to figure out, okay, are we in line in all of these categories? There's a number of different resources. This is the one from Dave Ramsey, and he has the recommended percent of income over to the side. You can fill this out, put your different expenses in there, and figure out, okay, if I'm off by 15 or 20% from what's recommended, maybe I need to figure out why. I think it's a good guideline. This may fluctuate based on your income. So if your income is low, you may spend more as a percent of income on utilities than someone who makes, you know, a lot of money. So the categories are kind of generalized, and there are other resources out there where they do this as well. But I think this is just a good place to start. It also gives you some guidance on what things that you can use cash for. So a big budget buster is for us is eating out. And if we don't use cash, we would eat out all the time. So we use cash. We use in what we call the envelope system, and we just write on the envelope, this is our, you know, eat out fund. And so any of the ones with the asterisks on them are ones which are recommended for cash. One category that is critical, which caused Tara and I much heartache initially, was this category called, under the personal section, called special money or mad cash. And this category, we failed to fund it in probably our first year or two of marriage, and we it really caused us a lot of headache. But I think it's important to give yourselves a certain amount of allowance that you're not accountable to. Decide among your, you know, your family how much that should be. And I think we started with $25 a month each. What would happen to me is, as I'm at work, I would go out to eat. People would be asking me, hey, you want to go out for lunch? And so I would use mine to go out to lunch. Of course, I would go to the cheapest place possible so that I could do it multiple times throughout the month. But that was where I spent my mad cash, as Tara, as Chris and Sarah call their money. We call it our special money. They call it mad cash. So anyhow, this is the this analysis is just helpful. Identify categories, list out your expenses, understand maybe you're already over budget. You get to the bottom and you add up your total expenses and you might find out that it doesn't match the income. So this just means that you know, and you probably know already that you know, things aren't working. It just might help you identify where they're not working and where you might probably need to cut some things out. The one important thing here also is just to make sure that you spend every dollar that you have. Everything should go into a category. Any loose dollars will disappear. So if anybody's ever done a budget before, they know that if you have loose money and it's not identified on somewhere, something comes up and you say, yeah, I think we can do that. We had a little bit of extra money and it's just gone. You know, whatever it was, it just disappears. And then the last point here is there just are no perfect budgets. If someone tells you that they have a perfect budget, they're lying. Every month there's something that comes up or something that changes about your budget. And so it never becomes perfect. It's just a starting place where you can begin to tell your money where to go. And it's important to do this before you get paid. If you wait till after you get paid, your money's already gone somewhere and it's disappeared. So make sure that you are doing a budget before you get paid. On the next slide, so this one looks really complex. The next one, this is actually the budget that we used when we lived in Southern Illinois. And life was easy. I got paid once a month. And so that made things really simple in terms of budgeting. But this was our monthly budget. We had my salary, Tara's salary, the total monthly income which we had. I was also doing some construction projects, so if we had any months where we made some money from me doing extra work, we would put it in there. And then these are the categories. I didn't change any of these categories. So this is what we would do. The last line, we applied to debt, and that was our student loans, or Tara's student loans. It was ours after we got married. But these were our student loans. So we paid the normal student loan payment up here, and as we got down to the end of the month, whatever remained, we just applied it to the loans. And this meant that it didn't matter what we had spent in any other category, but by the time we got to the bottom, every dollar was spent. So there was no loose dollars. We knew exactly where the last line item was going, and that was going to be to pay off this debt. Yellow categories, this is all of our cash. So we just highlighted those in yellow and just said, okay, this is what we're going to do. These categories, some people struggle with, you know, they like to shop. So if clothing is an issue for you, put it in an envelope. And then save up. You know, what we do is we put a little bit in an envelope, she saves up, and then eventually we get to go, you know, do a little shopping. And then automatic transfers for savings. Some of these things didn't occur, you know, every month. So Christmas, we put it in the budget, but it's not, you know, it's not Christmas every month. So this is just transferring to a savings account. We transfer it from our checking to our savings. Same with our real estate tax and homeowners insurance. I think we were also doing our auto insurance maybe on every 6 months or so we would just, you know, whatever our premium was divided by six, and then we would put that money aside into a savings account. So this just helps you to, once those expenses come, those are budget busters. If you don't plan for Christmas, before Christmas gets here, Christmas is a big deal. It's an emergency. So planning for those in advance, you can plan for that all year long. It happens in December, you know, it's there on the calendar, so we can make plans according to what the calendar looks like. I think this is much simpler than the previous form or the form that you guys have. But this, it doesn't have to be complex. It can be pretty simple. And the cash actually makes it very simple to know when you've reached the end of the budget. Yeah, just one more, you know, in terms of the, if you find that you're over budget, so the outgoing expenses are more than the income, there's really no secret to this, to fix it, right? If you have a credit card and you're putting some expenses on it, this is, credit card debt is really a symptom of a bigger issue. And the issue is the outgo does not match the income. So whatever you're putting out is not enough. What you're taking in is not enough to cover what's going out. So the only secrets to fixing a budget, to getting it balanced, is to lower your expenses or increase your income. So that is the secret. There is no magic pill you can take that's going to fix your budget. Um, And you know, the budget does need to be balanced. We're not the federal government printing money, so we need to balance our budgets. I would just make one note about the budget. The vast majority of the arguments in our marriage have been about money. And, you know, this may be true of other couples as well, but it seems like that is a very sensitive issue. And I think by putting things together on a budget and looking at it together monthly, this can eliminate a lot of issues within your marriage, and it can save you a lot of headaches. So one thing that it's not shown on the budget is a tax refund. If you get a tax refund every year and it's like a big savings account for you, this is just not good. I mean, especially if you're skimping throughout the year, or if you're working on paying off debt. If you get a huge tax refund at the end of the year, you probably need to up your deductions. This is a way that you can increase your income, so your monthly income. And it doesn't matter how many kids you have, you can just keep ratcheting up the number of deductions that you're putting on your, I don't even know what the form is called, W-4, maybe that's what it is, yeah. So if you put that on your W-4, that will help you to avoid a huge tax refund, which is, it's actually a good thing to increase your income during the month or throughout the year instead of getting a huge refund at the end of the year. Some of the hazards that we should try to avoid. As you can see here, I don't really make any bones about the credit cards. I am just not a fan of credit cards. I once bought a lawnmower on a credit card. It was the nicest lawnmower I've ever owned. It was really nice. I put 52 hours on that lawnmower before I sold it. It cost me about $25 to $30 per hour in depreciation. It was a really expensive lawnmower, especially the amount of money I lost by buying it on a credit card and then selling it. It was just unwise. In college, I took a trip to Europe. All of the spending money was on a credit card. This was not wise. This was dumb. I forgot to call the, you know, just as a side note, I forgot to call the credit card company. So they kept shutting off my credit card as I was in Europe trying to have a good time on a trip. If I would have had cash, I would have been fine. You know, you can spend, everybody takes cash. But they won't take a broken credit card. I know many of you may have credit cards. They're not friendly, even though they tell you they're friendly. Their goal in life is to get you to spend money. They don't care if you pay a dime of interest ever. So if you pay it off every month, they don't care. And they won't complain about it. What's interesting about them is they're skimming a little bit off of every transaction that you make. So if you're using a credit card, they're taking a percentage of that from the retailer. Rewards, they're tempting. I get offers in the mail nearly every month. Some of them just look good. I'm like, man, we're going on vacation. I could use those rewards. All I have to do is sign up. You know, we could do this. But I'm just to remind myself, these things are really... they're experts in separating people from their money. This is what they do. Their goal in life is to get people to spend money using the plastic card. And it places people in bondage. I've heard that every customer acquisition for a credit card company, it takes them 7 years to pay back. That means people must be really loyal to credit cards. Because if it takes them 7 years, you're a customer of theirs, it takes them 7 years for you being their customer to get paid back, that means that you're keeping that credit card for a long time. It's like a long-term relationship. College students, be wary of this. They know that those people in college who get their first credit card are likely to keep that credit card. So they're not. It's really a science. Understanding people, the way that they become attached to these credit card companies. I'm guessing that probably some of you here may still have the first credit card that they got 10 to 15 years ago. It's crazy to me, but it's true. People are loyal to the credit cards. Credit with no accountability. For work, I have to carry a credit card for traveling. It's what they use for our travel expenses. My credit card has, I think, a $10,000 limit. This is insane. They give, at will, they would just allow me to go spend $10,000 unchecked. That, to me, is crazy. That is like, I don't know how anyone could do that. And who knows how many of these they have spread across the company. There's probably $40 million worth of liability just hanging out there on plastic. This is insane. That's just one of the risks. I think they're a crutch. If you have an emergency fund in place, you don't need a credit card. It's been 7 years since Tara and I had a personal credit card, and we seem to be doing fine. I've rented cars. I've gone on trips. We buy groceries. It's amazing. We can do any of these things without a credit card. So there's some rules for credit cards. Even though I hate to give rules about something I wish you didn't have, I will. Pay it off every month or cut it up. So if you are rolling the balance over, this means that it's likely that you're unable to really manage this well. I think that it's not. Credit cards are a trap. So if you have a balance that's rolling over every month, you might as well cut it up now, because it's going to be an ongoing issue. So cut them up, close the account, and then work to pay them off. So rewards are not free. Credit card companies make money. Let's face it, they absolutely make money. So if we have some in our congregation who are earning rewards from the credit card companies, someone else in our congregation is paying for the rewards that those people are getting. It's not really a reward. So if you're earning rewards, then look to your neighbor and say thank you for paying for my rewards. They absolutely make money. And they're, back to point number one, I really hate credit cards. And if we just had a barrel outside and everybody just wanted to throw them in on their way out, we could just light it up. So, John, I'll put John in charge of that. Hazard number two. Automobiles. Vehicles will be the largest purchase that most people will make during their lifetime, which will go down in value. There are some common mistakes when buying an automobile. Failure to calculate the total cost. Leasing. Frequent turnover. Lack of maintenance. And need versus wants. So a need might be, I need this vehicle to carry 5 people. I'd like it to go 100,000 miles, and I have about $5,000 to spend. Those are kind of set the boundaries for what you might need. Then you may say, what I would want is I want an SUV. What I really want is I want a diesel. I want it to be red with big tires. So that would be wants. But you have to remember that cars, they don't last. It's not an investment, contrary to what some might believe. So when you're buying a car, just make sure that it's not an emotional decision, that this is a business transaction that takes place, and this is something that it's costing you money every month. You have to pay for insurance. You have to pay for tires. You have to pay for gas, maintenance, all these things. This is a business transaction, which is a monthly expense. So there are some things we can do to ensure we're buying cars correctly. Making sure that we calculate total cost, comparing multiple car options, even across brands. I have a crazy calculator that I made, which has been a thorn in my side since I've made it. Back in 2008, when gas was at $4.10 a gallon, I was eagerly trying to justify buying a diesel Volkswagen so I could drive the 90 miles per day back and forth to work. Unfortunately, using my calculator, I could never beat out the Honda Civic. For some reason, it was the cost of the diesel was just so much more for that diesel engine that I could never justify purchasing it. And it's basically a cost per mile, which we'll look at a simplified version of that in a few moments. So, yeah, as I mentioned before, just don't fall in love with a vehicle before buying. You'll most likely make an emotional decision for something that should be a business decision. And so always be ready to walk away. And then buy pre-owned vehicles. Depreciation of a new vehicle is significant. The moment you walk out the door, it's dropping in value, and it will drop steeply in the next few years after purchasing a new vehicle. I just want to talk about a coworker of mine. He's like-minded in terms of finances. He and his wife are 40. They have 3 children. They have no debt. They own their home. They paid cash for their college. That sounds nuts. What they did is they worked a year, and then they went to school for a year. I think they both went to Tennessee Tech. But they would work a year and go to school a year, save money, live dirt cheap, and then go to school for a year and pay for it. So there are ways to do things without debt, and these folks are 40 years old, 3 children, no debt. She's staying home, homeschooling their kids, and he's an engineer who works with me. They decided a few months ago to replace their van that had over 200,000 miles on it. It wasn't an urgent need, so they kept their eyes out for a good deal, and they found one. I found a 2006 Dodge Grand Caravan with 58,000 miles. They went to the dealer and wrote a check and took their new van, or nearly new van, home. They found a receipt from the first owner, who was still in the glove box. It said the first owner paid $27,000 for this van. So $27,000. That means they paid 31 cents, and they drove it 58,000 miles. So $17,900 in value, the van dropped from the time they purchased it until my friend bought it. And they probably lost more than that, because that's what my friend paid for it. So it's not likely that they actually got that much money for it from the dealer. So it cost them 31 cents a mile in depreciation. If you don't remember what 31 cents is, that's a quarter, a nickel, and a penny. Every time they pass one of those little green posts out there on Highway 40, you just throw it out the window. You know, you pass one of those about every minute. So you can pretty well keep track of how much that is by the time you get to Nashville. So if we go to the next slide, I'll just show you how much that is. So I've put up three different examples here of kind of what that looks like. The couple number one was the couple who bought the van new. And they paid $27,000 for the vehicle. They sold it for $9,100. I'm going to guess. It's probably lower than that, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They sold it for $9,100. So it cost them, just in depreciation, $17,900. It was a good warranty, though. They didn't have any issues, 58,000 miles of happiness. When they sold it, they had 58,000 miles. Depreciation cost, it was almost 31 cents a mile, just under. If you went to Nashville and came back about 260 miles on that car, it cost $80.24 round trip. Drive to Nashville, come back, $80.24 in depreciation. That's just in depreciation. So then you throw in 20 bucks for gas, you got a $100 trip driving to Nashville with your family. Couple number two. So you might say, okay, well, what if I just buy it? You know, I'm a long-term, I buy it new, I plan to drive this thing for 200,000 miles. So what's that going to look like? It's, again, just depreciation. So I buy it at 27,000. I'm going to probably sell it around 2,000. So it's costing me about 25,000 to own it, as long as I don't take out a loan to buy it. It's going to have 200,000 miles on it. Now I'm paying 12.5 cents a mile. So just to go to Nashville and come back, this is a so much better deal than the first guy, but it's still $32.50. So my friend, he's guy number three, and he is weird. He paid cash, $9,100 for it. He plans to drive it until it's got 200,000 miles on it, and he's going to sell it for $2,000. So he's paying $7,100. He's going to drive a total of 142,000 miles, and it's costing him a nickel per mile. A nickel versus 31 cents. That's pretty significant. And he bought a nearly brand new van. I mean, 58,000 miles these days is nearly brand new. His cost to go to Nashville and come back with his family is $13 in depreciation. That's just depreciation. So then you're going to tack on whatever else you're doing there. But I just wanted to give you an example of what it looks like. And this is a real life situation. He bought this van just a few months ago. I remember when he was telling me about it, I was just like, man, that is amazing that they paid that much money for that van and they drove it 58,000 miles. But people do it all the time. If you're going to do this, the first two places you need to call if you're buying a vehicle, insurance agent, you need to understand the total cost. So call your insurance agent and call a mechanic. If you're going to buy a vehicle, especially a pre-owned vehicle, take it to a mechanic. $40 can save you a lot of headaches. The guys, just have them look it over. So that's my hazard number two. The last hazard is just housing. We talked about it a little bit at the beginning of the lesson, but common mistakes just include buying too much house, not having a budget in place. If there's anybody that lends money, and if you lend someone money without first seeing their budget, I would just encourage you to make that a common practice, to look at someone's budget before you lend them money, to make sure that they can afford it. It will just save everyone a lot of headaches. Borrowing the down payment. This increases your cost when purchasing a home. And then, this is something that's just really crazy. I need it for a tax deduction. So I'm buying a home. I want to have a home mortgage so that I get a tax deduction. So if you have a home mortgage and you pay $1,000 per year in interest and your tax rate is 20%, when you do your taxes, you will save $200. So if anybody's looking for a tax deduction where they save $200, but so they hand someone $1,000, they give them $200 back, and they say, that was a great deal, I will sign up for that all day long. So if anybody wants to just give me $1,000, I'll give you $200 back, and we could do this every year. It seems crazy. So if anybody ever says to you, I need this for a tax deduction, it's just not realistic. It's not wise. So this is these are the three hazards. These are big hazards which we have today. I think I'm just about out of time, but I want to open it up for questions. I think I've covered quite a bit of ground, and hopefully, if you guys have any questions, I can answer them appropriately. Does anybody have any questions? Yeah. Investing?
Yeah.
So there's, in terms of like a retirement or a...
Well, like, if you're just having a general savings account and set like big money in a mattress, where should you put your money?
Well, we have, in terms of our savings, most of our savings we just have with a local bank. And so then we have a few accounts. One is an emergency fund, which never gets touched. And then we have like a general checking account and a savings account. And so that allows us to, if we're trying to save for a certain item, like a car, we just transfer money into a savings and try to keep track of how much we put in there for it. Does that answer your question? That's a good question. So if you are having your savings account just, so the question is, should you, if you have like a $5,000 in the bank, should you just leave it in the bank or should you use it or to invest? If it's your emergency fund, it should not be invested. It should be liquid. Investments can go up and they can go down. So you want that to be a liquid asset that you can get to if you need it, and you don't have to worry about your funds going away. So if it's an emergency fund, stash it away in a bank. It's not, the purpose of it is not to make money. It's there for a rainy day, if that makes sense. Any other, Clint? Mm-hmm.
And so as you're placing items in your budget, you're thinking, well, I'm kind of selfish. I'm putting 10% more time, but I'm only giving 80%.
Right.
Don't think that your retirement is just cash out at the end at 65 or 70, and all that's your money to do whatever you want to. Whatever. So just, I think we need to change our mind about the way we think. Make sure our retirement, we're not thinking this is for me at the end of my life, it's for me to just enjoy. That's not what it says to me.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I just thought about that. Also, the idea of the 30-year mortgage, we're about to refi ours and all of that. And just think about, as far as young people, especially when you start out on a 30-year mortgage, there's a huge chunk of that payment, all of a sudden maybe $20, that's going lower the term of I mean, what's wrong with going to 10-year mortgage?
Yeah.
Your interest rate's going to be less. So just at least consider that as well, I think, when you're considering buying the house. Don't just do 30-year as a way to balance out. Why I'm paying this much rent or whatever, just buy less house. You know, consider trying to get to a lower amount of term as possible, lowest interest rate as possible, so that you can set yourself up for success in giving in.
Yeah, Clint was just telling us about the retirement investment. This is God's money, that we should be using this and planning for it long term as a means to provide for the church, as a means to provide for some for our family, if they're good stewards. As we watch our family grow, we can understand pretty well how good of stewards they're going to be. And if they're not going to be good stewards, we need to give it to some place where it's going to where they are going to be good stewards. And then in terms of a home, he's just mentioning, yeah, that's as you have a 30-year mortgage, you're paying a lot more money over the life of that term in interest that could be otherwise spent for building up the kingdom. Tara? Oh, yeah, I did not cover that, but... Yeah, Tara's just mentioning that the... One thing I forgot to mention, given my good notes here, is the if this is your first time doing a budget, is just go to Dollar Tree, buy a little notebook for a dollar, one that'll fit in your pocket. Every time you spend any money, I mean a quarter, a dime, a dollar at the vending machine, write it down, and then you can categorize what you spend your money on and know what these categories are going to be. So if this is your first time, make sure that you do that, and that way you can keep track of it. The second thing she said was that there's no perfect budget, and it's going to take probably 3 months to actually get this figured out on what you need to be doing each month. So the first month is going to be miserable. The second month is going to be a little bit better. The third month is going to be a little bit better, but it's still going to be messed up. By the fourth month, you're probably going to have a pretty good idea of what your expenses are and how you can manage it better. Yes, go ahead. No, I think that it's not if you have a debt. If it's if you have a past due payment, previous months. Maybe that was maybe I messed that up. But go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Really insane, the income in my house and how much
Yeah. I mean, as being stewards, we are responsible for what God gives us. And if we are not spending it wisely, we're called to invest in the kingdom, right? I mean, if we read the scriptures, that is where we should place our treasures. It should not be in things of this earth. And so if we're building a kingdom here, we just need to keep that in check. And I think you're absolutely right, Verna. I think what I tried to clarify this week was just that we need to take steps in our lives to change our habits. It might be that we have to do something radical. We might have to sell our home so that we can get our finances in line. We might have to downgrade. I appreciate it. This is a great discussion. We could go on all night. Just one note on the house. Casey lives in a hut. So if anybody thinks that, we need a mansion to live in, Casey lives in a hut. So thank you guys.